coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, Bathrobs, Piers, Broadsides, 3.5 hours of civil rights on your plate. Stay with us.
The homeless, a problem for only one reason. That president raises a question, who owns the land? The homeless. The homeless, a problem for only one reason. That president raises a question, who owns the land? The homeless are a problem for only one reason. Our president raises a question, who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be 90 million dead Indians? Who owns the land? Could it be 6 million Jews? Who owns the land? Is there a connection? Who owns the land? To all imperialism? Who owns the land? Won't someone please tell me? Who owns the land? I am just a white man. Who owns the land? I live in the Americas. Who owns the land? How did I get here? This morning, I was awoken by a man with a handgun. He's got a book of rules that says I ain't got no right to sleep. This morning, I was awoken by a man with a handgun. He's got a book of rules that says I ain't got no right to be. Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be that there's a connection? Who owns the land? To my daily eviction. Who owns the land? And the extermination. Who owns the land? Of the Native American. Who owns the land? Won't someone please tell me? Who owns the land? Cause I am just a white man. Who owns the land? I live in the Americas. Who owns the land? How did I get here? Just a question, who owns the land? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is
home?
Welcome to Bathrobs, Piers, Broadsides. Another edition of beautiful Free Radio's favorite show, or certainly one of them. I don't know if it's my favorite show, but it's the one I do regularly, so I guess I got to back it. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, which is 96.3 FM, or also www.microradio.net, /FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz, of course. And that's our website. That's the website you can use to catch us streaming. If you're not in the area, you can hear this show or any of your other favorite shows. You can pick up a schedule if you don't have a schedule already by giving a call to Free Radio at 427-4523. That's our voicemail. And also, we're much interested in any kind of donations you may have. We're looking for old equipment. I'd love to see an old VCR donated here because I get the City Council's videotapes. I record them off the air, and sometimes there's some interesting things, mostly depressing things, but sometimes interesting things the Santa Cruz City Council says at its meetings that I can't play on the air because I don't have access to a VCR here. The old one went kaput, so if anybody has any equipment, any funds, any checks, write them out to Free Radio or FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz or FRSC. Love to get your money, love to get your equipment. We'll put it to use here. Again, leave a message at 427-4523, the voicemail. And if you're interested in being on the air, you've got a program or you'd like to have a program on the air, you think that isn't being covered by our current exhaustive coverage here, you can get us a tape. And our programming committee will look it over and tell you what they think. There's actually broad latitude, particularly for programs that we don't have, areas we don't have covered. So do get in touch with us if that is an interest of yours. Also, public service announcements, PSAs are something Free Radio plays regularly. We are a community radio station. We are interested in serving the community. I think we do serve the community. And you can help in that service by passing on your PSAs to us, and we will pass them on to the community broadly. Again, voicemail 831-427-4523. Snail mail, if you want to send us a letter, Free Radio Santa Cruz, P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Again, P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. And if you want to catch me in the studio now for this show that's going to be on your in your living room, perhaps, for the next 3 hours, 3.5 hours. If you're that patient, is the phone number to call is 427-3772, 427-FRSC. Again, Free Radio Santa Cruz's studio line. We only got one of them, but be patient. If you can only call once or you're getting tired of waiting past a busy signal, for some reason somebody's not answering here, you can leave me a message on the Huff line. That's Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at 423-HUFF. 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Give us a call, give me a call, and I will take your message later, maybe refer to it on my next show, which is, if you want something mentioned publicly, at Thursdays, 6 to 8 in the afternoon evenings, and or perhaps next Sunday when I come back on again from 9:30 to 1. So again, studio number 427-3772. Or you can call the Huff line if you want to leave me a message off-air at 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF. So it's kind of a catch-up time for me here in the studio today because I've got lots of tape that I have kind of begun on earlier shows but haven't had a chance to complete. Today we're going to be covering, first off, the issue in San Francisco of anti-homeless billboards that are being plastered around, and a debate that came up on that issue on KGO's Pete Wilson show, one of the right-wing talk shows that desecrates the airwaves up there. Activist Becky Johnson, who's also my producer, called in to, or she actually sent them a fax, and I don't know if I have a copy of that fax in the studio. Maybe I can dig one up. But you'll hear some interesting debate and discussion. I think he reads it on the air, Pete Wilson does. And then there's a discussion, pro and con. Apparently Wilson was trashing Paul Bowden of the Coalition on Homelessness. That's the large, well-organized, very articulate group up north that I call them one of the big three in the state. They're one of the three main homeless civil rights organizations. One is the Coalition in San Francisco. Another is BOSS, Better Outreach Support Services in Berkeley, and the third is the LA Coalition Against Hunger and Homelessness. HUFF, down here in Santa Cruz, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, is really kind of a teeny tiny organization. You know, I mean, we have been longevity. We've been going for a long time. but we're nowhere near the size of these major organizations. Anyway, Bowdoin heads Coalition on Homelessness, and they put out Street Sheet, a monthly paper, which is pretty good. It's published without advertising, and it's published without government grants. They get private donations, and so they're pretty independent on that issue and pretty outspoken on issues of homeless civil rights in San Francisco. And my hat's off to them for all the struggling they've been doing against various anti-homeless measures to protect privacy of homeless people, to expand shelter services up there, to stop police harassment, to support associated organizations like Food Not Bombs and Homes Not Jails and the San Francisco Tenants Union, groups that are trying to stop homelessness by securing the rights of people and securing sort of basic shelter and trying to stop the vast inflation and escalation in the rent scene and the vast amount of police and landlord privilege and merchant privilege that seems to be our fate in the 21st century at the moment. Anyway, Bowdoin was trashed by Pete Wilson on the show. The practice of putting up these massive "don't give money to panhandlers" billboards that have gone up. We kind of ridiculed this idea into non-existence in Santa Cruz. They called it, "Give a hand, not a handout," or some nonsense down here where they're trying to. It was a merchant-run program with the theory that if you kind of starve out the homeless, that you can, you know, remove this unsightly detritus from nearby in front of your stores, and it's going to address the economic crisis that, of course, it doesn't. It's a scapegoating kind of thing, and it doesn't work. And it really attacks all of us because it makes everyone more insecure. It creates bad feeling. It's kind of mean and nasty and petty. And it's something that activist Becky Johnson has written about a number of times for Street Spirit. I think she even had an editorial or two published in The Sentinel, of all places. The Sentinel occasionally does give time, kind of on a 1-for-10 basis. They trash you 10 times, and they let you in on the 10th time to respond. And I thought Becky did that very well on the several occasions when she's done it in The Sentinel, and I think she did it very well in the Street Spirit articles she's written. That's the newspaper published, kind of a companion newspaper to Street Sheet up in San Francisco, sold by homeless people for money for drugs and military equipment so they can, you know, rob stores and break into residences and so forth. You know, you don't want to give money to homeless people or even buy papers, because if you buy papers, see, that empowers homeless people to waste their money and get deeper into their addictions and, engage in questionable antisocial behavior instead of simply disappearing or making use of the totally inadequate shelter services that exist, and the rest of them, well, they should disappear somewhere else. Or that it'll all work out. That seems to be the philosophy of the folks up in San Francisco. Now, in all fairness, I don't have a partisan of this program on the air, and I haven't called one yet, but if our producer, if she can maintain some kind of equanimity and objectivity here, can find anybody who wants to argue for this position, maybe one of our callers, one of our listeners, I should say, out there wants to be a caller and call in and defend this. So why don't you listen to a little of this tape, and I'm going to try to drag a few articles out of the paper that were anti-homeless and in favor of this merchant scapegoating program that, again, was sort of tried and abandoned on a smaller basis. They didn't put up billboards in Santa Cruz, but they gave out little slips of paper that said, don't give money to the homeless, instead give money to these different social services, and then listed some numbers on the phone, the back phone numbers in the back of these little kind of business card-sized paper slips to give to homeless people. So instead of giving them a quarter or a smile or no, but have a good day, you give them this little piece of paper which says sort of, fuck you, go to the shelter here. And of course the numbers aren't really of shelter services that are open or available. For example, the Homeless Services Center doesn't provide shelter except for 39 people each night on the floors of churches that are always filled 8 months of the year. The rest of the time people get to dodge the sleeping ban or sleep in unsafe places or face $54 fines. That's the reality of it. And of course this is all covered up with this kind of nonsensical it's really nonsensical because it doesn't even address the issues the merchants want to address, just as the downtown ordinances against hacky sacking and frisbeeing and bubble blowing and sitting down on the sidewalk and having an unattended backpack on the sidewalk or playing music with a display device within 10 feet of a storefront or building or bench or so forth. These don't address the real problems that merchants are concerned with and that all of us really are concerned with, like violence or shoplifting or abusive drug use, shootings, vandalism, that sort of thing. Those are, you know, legitimate and real problems. We can debate the extent of their prominence, or how serious they are at the moment. There's a call. But we don't deny their real problems. Anyway, these issues aren't addressed by billboards. They're not addressed by anti-homeless laws. Let's see if this caller can address them. Hi there, caller. You're on Free Radio.
Hello, it's me, Coral. And I'm listening to your show.
Cool.
It's great. I wanted to know if you've heard who did the damage at Starbucks, the painting the windows.
You know, I haven't even heard that there was damage. Maybe you should give us a report, and perhaps you know more than others. Perhaps you have paint on your fingernails there, caller?
Well, no, not at the moment. I have some thread on my fingers.
Oh, well, maybe you can draw the threads of this together for us. What was this? Is this our local Starbucks you're talking about?
This is a local Starbucks. It was a picture of it in the Sentinel.
Oh.
Just two nights ago, I was in an ugly mug, so I had to show it to the establishment. So look what happened to Starbucks.
Whoa. Now, Starbucks, of course, is a little coffee shop downtown, which is part of a big chain right across from the coffee roasting company. I think the only distinction Starbucks has is it has an open bathroom for its customers, unlike our fine local coffee roasting company, which will not allow its bathroom to be used even by its customers. But what was this picture about?
That vandals had put paint all over the windows and all over the sidewalks. Don't have the copy in front of me, but the picture looked very serious.
Now, were these Becky Johnson-led vandals with erasable chalk?
I don't know.
It doesn't sound like it if it was paint.
I know they're making Crayola paint for sidewalks. I saw an ad for that on the internet for kids.
Crayola paint? What is that, erasable paint? Or?
Erasable paint for sidewalks is the big billboard, yeah.
Well, you know, I haven't been downtown in a day or two. I don't know what's been happening and whether this painting, as you describe it, has been removed or what it looks like. Have you been down there to see it? Or?
I'm going to be going down there. Just in a little while.
Maybe you can call in and tell us if there's still an art display at Starbucks or whether it's been removed.
All right. Unless someone else finds out, I will do that.
Cool. Well, thank you, Coral. And I should also say thank you for the musical activity last Sunday?
Oh, it's quite welcome.
Yeah. That's, you're with a new group, and what's the group called again?
Johnny Guitar Smith. We have another name which just hasn't been established.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But we'll be performing in Santa Cruz someday.
Really? When is that? This Sunday or next Sunday?
Probably the end of May.
Uh-huh. Wow. Feel free to call in and announce it, and we'll also... I know some of your songs concern local issues like homeless civil rights, which I'm concerned about.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly, but I don't exactly recall what was in your song... It was called Homeless, right?
Homeless, about how we treat them like discarded trash and just ignore them, basically. Then it gives the point of view that they're not hopeless, they're not soulless. They're simply homeless.
Oh, come on. Those homeless people are worthless, and you know it. For heaven's sake, don't you believe KGO?
I'd like someone to challenge me, yeah.
Well, I'm going to... I'm looking at the album now. It's Johnny Smith's Hollywood, and there are a number of songs on here. Hollywood, Run, Johnny, Run, Good Morning, Jesus, My Life, Homeless, South Bronx, Aaron, Danny O'Brien. I guess there's number nine. There's a
uh-huh,
ninth.
Uh-huh. That's the acapella one.
And is that... which of these do you recommend we play right now?
Well, if you're... you're interested in what's happening in New York City, South Bronx has a good slant on things. It's a nice mellow song about being about the, what the people are like.
And does it relate to our theme of civil rights and homeless people?
Yes, it would.
Way cool. Well, let me play it then, and thank you for calling in. Hope we can get an update on the coffee calamities downtown.
I'll get on that and have a cup of coffee on me.
All righty. Thanks, Coral.
See ya.
I'm headed on down to the South Bronx. That's where all my good friends live. Ain't got much money in the South Bronx, but they sure do know how to give. People told me not to go there, 'cause the color of my skin. But you know what I found out about the South Bronx? Is the people are just like me and you. Is the people are just like me and you. Thank you. down to the South Bronx. So I'm headed on down to the South Bronx. That's where all my good friends live. That's where all my good friends.
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 Wilson program on KGO on a Wednesday afternoon. Billboards that advertise or tell people, visitors to the city of San Francisco or residents, not to contribute to panhandlers, not to drop a quarter in the little cup. Let's talk to Barbara to begin. She's on a cell phone in Napa this afternoon. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, Pete. How are you?
I'm fine.
Good. I haven't seen the signs personally myself yet,
yep.
but they do sound really stupid and naive. I mean, homeless people aren't homeless because they want to be homeless. I think majority of them are probably mentally ill, and they need social services and help mentally. So, you know, giving them a quarter or a dollar or something isn't going to maybe do much for them,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, maybe it will buy them something at McDonald's or something.
Well,
you know?
Maybe that's true, Barbara, in some cases, and not true in others. I mean, I think a lot of those people out there have made choices repeatedly in their lives, but there is an enormous amount of mental illness out there, which we also have not confronted. We have refused to deal with that. We just won't do it.
And also in jail. I mean, they're in jail.
They don't belong in jail. Jail is not where they belong.
Right. I mean, there's a lot of mental illness that people just aren't really aware of, I think.
Well, Barbara, part of the problem here is that San Francisco has encouraged this. Quite frankly, with our programs, with our attitudes, with our style of running things, we've encouraged it, and we have a worse problem than any other city in the country. Now, what do we do about it?
Worse than Berkeley?
Yeah.
I mean, send them to Berkeley. Berkeley seems to like
the trouble with that, Barbara, is they'll turn right around and send them back here. You don't send them someplace. You try to deal with the problem. We've talked about this before. But I have no problem with these ads. I don't know that people are going to pay any attention to them. But the restaurant, you know, the Restaurant and Hotel Owners Association, they're desperate right now. The economy is the pits. And they think that the homeless people on the street hitting up the tourists who are staying in their hotels or going to their restaurants is hurting. Let's talk to Bill in San Francisco on KGO. Hello, Bill.
Hi, Pete. I want to talk to you about the billboard issue and kind of the homeless issue in general.
Certainly.
I have sympathy for the hotel owners, and I feel like it's an act of desperation on their part because they don't feel like they're getting any help from the city. They've
yeah.
been fighting for years to try to get it cleaned up, and, you know, this is just, I think it's one way of kind of showing the city, look, this is what we're going to do if you don't do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe embarrass some people. I'm not sure. And in regards to the opposition, the Homeless Coalition, or I guess the actual name is the Coalition on Homelessness,
mm-hmm.
Although I think their name really should be the Coalition for Homelessness.
Yes.
Because, you know, ask them what they've done, you know, what progress has been made with their agenda, you know, if they've done anything to try to solve the problem, because they haven't. And if you talk to them and really get down to it, they do not want the homeless people off the street. They want them on the street and in the face of what they call yuppies, which is, I think, anybody with a job.
And right. And quite frankly, I mean, my position on this is an old one, Bill. It's parallel to yours. I think that they have, in a large part, created the problem or certainly encouraged it to continue.
It's terrible. They're using these people for their political agenda. You know, they want them there. You know, they want the streets filthy. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're anarchists. I don't know what you want to call.
But it's just
they hate people that are achieving and stuff, and they want us to see, you know, how the other half lives, instead of really sincerely making the tough decision and saying, no, we're not going to accept, you know, we expect more of you. We expect you to be able to be off the street and live a decent life. And
yeah, you know, Bill,
require that of people. If you don't require it of people, they won't, you know.
Well, listen, I want you to listen to this, Bill, and just stay with me for a second here. This is from Becky Johnson of Huff, an email from the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom in Santa Cruz. Now, the arguments here I've heard 1,000 times. They are well recorded in the homeless movement. Essentially, they're the same arguments they've used, arguments that have long since, I think, been discredited. But here she goes. Pete, I'm opposed to the billboards discouraging giving to panhandlers. First, all religions teach we should help those who are less fortunate. Discouraging individual charity to people who are poor and homeless is morally repugnant. Second, homeless people exist in every city due to the lack of federal, state, and local governments to ensure living wages to employees and affordable housing. Ah, now we have the politics, see? Tourists are no more or less likely to visit San Francisco than any other city in the USA. I don't know why she thinks that. She's from Santa Cruz, but fine. She says third, saying homeless people use drugs, spread diseases, and discourage tourism is blaming the victim. See, we're victims now. People with money and homes use drugs and spread diseases. Panhandlers can use the money for phone change, bus fare, aspirin, vitamins, sunscreen, toothpaste, dental floss, deodorant, a cup of coffee, and so on and so on and so on, and hundreds of other items that are not drugs or alcohol. These billboards show the bigotry and the heartlessness of the Hotel and Motel Association in San Francisco and should be soundly criticized and opposed. The problem there is, Bill, and I don't know how you feel about it, she's wrong on every single count. I mean, provably wrong.
Well, I think so, too. And like I said, you have to, you know, you have to get to these people's real motives. And, you know, everyone keeps looking the other way and thinks that they're just nice people who are trying to help the homeless. But I think a lot of them really aren't. I mean, I think a lot of people, like maybe this emailer, are well-meaning people who like, you know, who, yep. who want to be good to people and kind and so on. But sometimes the way to be kind to people is to require things of them and to say, I will not accept seeing you lying in the gutter there. You're going to either get help. But it's not acceptable for you to be in the gutter. And if she wants to say people do drugs at home, fine. People do drugs at home. They're not infringing on other people. They can.
That's right. They're not asking people to support that habit. That is exactly it, Bill. Thank you very much for the call. It's remarkable logic on the part, and I've heard this same spiel 100 times. She says that if I do not give money to the homeless on the street, that in some way that's morally repugnant. Or if I encourage others not to give money, that's morally repugnant. How do you manage to twist reality to that extent? If I say, look, I pay taxes, lots of taxes, and part of those taxes go to help people in difficult straits, mentally ill, whoever else happens to come into these categories, and I choose not to give extra to those people on the streets, but that is morally repugnant. It's fascinating. Greg on a cell phone in Modesto this afternoon. How are you, Greg?
Good afternoon, Pete. You know, I listened to that last conversation, and the topic on the alcohol
yep.
reminds me why I moved away from the Bay Area and moved back to the Central Valley.
Hey, listen, I had some friends, actually my brother-in-law and his wife, that came out from the Midwest a year ago. We
mm-hmm.
took the ferry from San Rafael from Larkspur, went over to this city, and decided to walk up to see a play.
Yep. And I know what you're going to say, because I've done the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just incredible.
Isn't it amazing?
Yeah.
And the city actually refuses to confront that problem. Now, again, what has that got to do? And I know the other callers, but that's a story that I've heard 100 times. Bill, thanks for telling it again. What are those people standing in front of the theaters or the restaurants in San Francisco with their hands out, and in sometimes in intimidating ways, what do they have to do with mental illness? That's what the restaurants and the hotels are upset with. That kind of street activity. Now, there are tons of mentally ill out there, more than 50%, according to all the studies. But we won't deal with that either. We've shut down mental institutions, facilities for handling this kind of thing. And it's largely because of activists who think that that's wrong. Or, to use another term we've already heard on this hour, morally repugnant. Bjorn on a cell phone in San Mateo joins us on KGO. Hello, Bjorn.
Regarding the homeless,
it doesn't mean you won't do something stupid, though.
Of course, yeah, but probably, you know, not hurling something or just lashing out at somebody.
No, that's a good argument. Yeah.
Regarding the homeless issue, I think that it's very important to keep in mind that this is not just a black and white issue.
No.
And that, as you mentioned very well, some of the or actually quite a few of them are have some kind of mental problems, and that many of these, as far as I know at least, go back to the early 80s, when a lot of these institutions were shut down by the Reagan government.
Well, it was actually earlier, and it was more complicated than that, Bjorn. There were a lot more people that contributed to shutting down mental institutions. Remember, it was not the Reagan presidency that shut down mental institutions. That's not when it happened. It happened in California when Reagan was governor, and slightly before that, and it happened in all other states. There was this There was this effort on the part of both the right and the left to shut them down, but for different reasons. One and thought they could save money. The other thought it was an affront to civil rights.
It just underscores the need to not think in simplistic categories, which happens all too often in the discourse about this and other topics. And then, you know, people try to paint it in broad strokes.
Yes, I know.
Really, ambiguity is required.
Bjorn, thank you very much for the call. You know, you want to see the little warning light go off in my head. Use that Reagan excuse. Now, I think I've told this story before, but I worked my way through the last couple of years in undergraduate school and into graduate school. I thought I was going to be a psychologist. I went into graduate school in psychology, and I worked my way through that latter part of my undergraduate degree working as a psychiatric social worker for the state of Wisconsin. I worked in an institution in Wisconsin. And we watched the process of the money squeeze occur in the mid-60s. That's when it really began. And it was the left and the right contributing to it, complementing each other. The right saying, we can save money if we shut down the institutions. The left saying, let's shut them down and let everybody go because it's just wrong to keep them in institutions. Now, I know people in California are fond of saying Reagan, 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 but it was happening in every state with Democratic governments, with Republican governments. Fascinating. 247 on KGO.
What are you trying to say? KGO!
251 on KGO, a couple of subjects for you today. Let's talk to Pete in the East Bay on KGO. Welcome, Pete. You're on with Pete Wilson.
I just think you're being really insensitive. I mean, you've talked about your psychology background, and you're a news guy. And I mean, look at these dot-comers that were, you know, they're knocking down $100,000 a month, driving a Bimmer, you know, drinking champagne, and they pull a funding that...
Actually, they're out of work right now, but that's okay,
now
Pete.
Now they're pushing shopping carts in the wine country at 6th and Howard. I mean, come on. You're being really insensitive to these people.
No, I know. And, you know, that's the problem with this whole discussion. Whenever I get into it, I am crushingly insensitive, Pete. But I thank you for pointing that out to me. I think it needs to be pointed out. Not only am I morally repugnant. You know, I forget the insensitivity. I just want to be known as the morally repugnant Pete Wilson. From now on, call me M.R. Wilson.
Morally.
It just goes together. There's a hyphen, a couple of hyphens in there. That's how I want to be known. We do not solve these problems by handouts on the street or by arguing that those people have a right to be on the street, especially when you're talking to people who don't, you know, with the 50% or better mental illness problem, who may not really understand the decisions they're making for themselves. Ooh, what am I suggesting here? But the Homeless Coalition has taken this position and encouraged people to stay on the streets, and I think harm them over the years, and that's never going to change unless they change. Al, on the cell, I have just a few moments left. Steve, please go ahead.
Hi, Pete. I am a big fan of yours for a long time. I had to say that first.
Oh, I appreciate it. That's not a bad thing.
You know, now that I'm living in streets, you don't get the local stations anymore. I'm stuck with Sacramento's programming, but I've always been a big fan. But what I wanted to say today was that one of the things that could possibly be a compromise solution is that, especially just to get out to people in San Francisco, and that's where I grew up, that stop giving money to the homeless people, get them coupons for food.
Yeah.
In other words, one of the things with the restaurant, that they could set up a special menu where they would even have maybe a kiosk, where you're going by and people are panhandling, say, here's a gift card to this restaurant, go there and they'll get you some food.
Steve, this may come as a surprise to you, but that has been suggested over the years, and there's a constant debate about it. I mean, many of the people in the Homeless Coalition have rejected that notion because it takes choice away from the panhandler.
Panhandler?
Yeah, I know it's not going to strike you as logical. That's just what they're arguing.
In other words, we've got a problem where we've got people on the street.
Yep.
And people that are trying to go to restaurants and stuff are being harassed. This is the only way and it actually could be profitable for the restaurant owners to tolerate them because they can make some money on the fact that people are buying their coupons. So this could be, you know, I'll scratch my back and I'll scratch yours.
Very good. Thank you very much for the call, Steve. This is KGO.
And actually, this is Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3 FM. You've been listening to a blip from, I think it was Wednesday afternoon, maybe Tuesday afternoon, on KGO, Pete Wilson reading and commenting on the Becky Johnson facts opposing billboards by merchants saying don't give to panhandlers. And there's some rather, I looked at the story in more detail. It's kind of nasty. I'm going to read. We actually had a lot of, I guess, pro-merchant or pro-billboard, I would call it propaganda, but let's say argument from Pete Wilson. I guess it's argument. He's on, in a way, he's paid because he's sponsored by KGO sponsors, and I presume that some of those may well be the same billboard supporters, but who knows? I don't know that for sure. It just sounds like it's his perspective, and maybe somebody like Ray Taliaferro up there, I haven't heard him for years, would oppose these billboards. I had a couple comments directly, although I'm going to leave it to you, audience, to respond to this rise to the challenge. Is Pete Wilson right? Should we be happy that, and perhaps encourage local merchants to put up billboards downtown saying don't give to the panhandlers? In fact, of course, that's what Santa Cruz is doing with its anti-homeless laws. It's making it very difficult for people to be out in public panhandling at all. And it has police 4 abreast, sometimes 6 abreast, not abreast, but, you know, in packs, roaming the mall with hosts behind them. Actually, I'm talking about police and hosts together. Intimidating people, harassing people, demanding IDs for innocent behavior, right, ranging from sitting on the sidewalk near a building to playing a guitar on a bench to chalking an erasable peace sign on the sidewalk to panhandling, sitting with a cup quietly and asking for money. If you have your girlfriend or wife nearby, that's now a crime, you see, because you're doing it together, and that's two people, and that's threatening. Or perhaps that's blocking, or perhaps that's just the best they can do, given the Constitution, to get rid of anybody indicating they are in need at all downtown. That sort of detracts from the shop-on ambience that they want, they being the merchants, and the police being essentially the servants of the merchants, or perhaps, to some extent, an organization with a mentality that believes the merchants have more right to be there than anybody else. We heard that, I think, effectively challenged by a musician, activist, and bubble blower, Tom Noddy, at the last show. Great debate and discussion. That wasn't really a debate. There was nobody on the other side, but a discussion of the anti-homeless, anti-musician laws and the gentrification practices that are going on in Santa Cruz. So, give a call if you want to 427-3772. Give me your thoughts on this billboard business, and also as it relates to Santa Cruz. Morally repugnant, sure it is. I don't give away change most of the time to people. I'm pretty tight-fisted, but I sure think they should have the right to ask, you know. And what's morally repugnant, I guess you can say other people have the right to say, we don't think you should give it away, and we want to put out that message, too. We want to spend a lot of money on billboards and such to do it. I guess I'm more concerned with anti-homeless laws. But those who, for example, believe in Judeo-Christian principles or Judeo-Islamic Christian principles that talk about the value of charity, I think would find this morally repugnant. I mean, if you're one of that religion, and it is Sunday, and perhaps we can get some spokespeople from those groups to call in, it's a duty to engage in charity, and it's your duty to make the decision as to whether, when you meet a person on the street, if you think she or he is in need, you can decide whether to give it to them or not, without assistance from anti-homeless laws or perhaps pressuring from large billboards. Although I'm saying it's not that it isn't the right of merchants to waste their money and despoil the public spaces with such billboards. I guess that's another issue, whether it's unsightly. I find that much more unsightly than a real human being downtown who is panhandling. But it is morally repugnant to people of those groups. So I guess if Pete Wilson isn't a member of any of those groups, then maybe it's not morally repugnant to him. I know if you're a sort of a part of the bourgeois merchant economy, and you don't have any ties with any kind of religious beliefs at all of a traditional sort, then maybe charity is not an issue, or you feel that your taxes alone constitute charity, perhaps, or your charity goes to organizations in a more organized manner, and it's okay to encourage people to only engage in certain kinds of charity. You know, I suppose if we were living in a science fiction-y kind of world where there were people who were addicted to a particular drug lining the streets looking for money, and people were giving away money, and that's all they were spending it on was that addiction, or primarily what they were spending it on, you might make an argument for the kind of, you know, don't give away money that they make and still consider that not to be morally repugnant. But I mean, there are arguments that say you are enabling people to stay on the streets by giving to, you know, giving them money, because either in the majority of the cases or in key cases or even just in some cases, they spend it on addictive drugs or alcohol, you know. And I'm certain that a percentage of the money does go to that. Irresponsible label on people as a way of dismissing a very real problem. This is the thing, the problem that he talks about. I guess liberals see as a problem, or reality, as the rest of us may see it as, of people who are poor, who don't have a place to sleep at night, who don't have often enough to eat or any kind of, you know, medical services or access to the rudimentary things that, that most of us take for granted. And that is, you know, it's nice to overlook all that and say, oh, these people simply choose to be there, or they're crazy, or gosh, all we need to do is round them up, put them in the hospitals, and that'll be, you know, that'll take care of them. And that was another statement that Wilson made. I obviously have to research this more. He claims that it was leftists and rightists in the 60s who, under the Pat Brown and Ronald Reagan governorships, closed down the mental hospitals. What I've read, and it's not been that extensive for that period, it did have to do with budgetary cutbacks. And there were concerns about massive civil rights abuses in the hospitals. The idea, however, was not so much to close them down as to remedy that with the Landis-Petrus Short Act. I'm not sure. It's LPS Act. I always get their names wrong. But it was passed in the late 60s, and it established you can't lock someone up on an involuntary psychiatric ward, a 5150 as it's called, for 72-hour observation and sometimes shooting up in treatment, frequently so-called treatment, without finding that they are either gravely disabled, a danger to themselves, or a danger to others. And that actually is, just for some believe, that's more honored in the breach than the observance, and you don't really have a lot of protections in spite of that criteria that's supposed to be instituted before you get locked away by authorities. However, I don't think that Coalition on Homelessness, for example, is calling for people to, it thinks it's a great idea for people to stay on the streets. I mean, that's complete horseshit, frankly. And if you talk to any Coalition on Homelessness person, you'll say, no, we're always pushing to expand shelter space and expand housing. But if people are on the streets, you've got to afford them basic civil rights. And one of those rights is the right to use your First Amendment right to ask for what you need from others. And now if you do so in an abusive manner, you do so in a threatening manner, that's something else. That becomes an assault. But if you don't, yeah, it's an annoyance to people because it puts you in contact with the reality. It's a guilt trip for some of us. For others, you know, it's a turnoff because we don't want these folks near our businesses, for heaven's sake. You know, it's Disneyland. Everything is wonderful here. We don't have this kind of problem here. These people are just, you know, creating that problem, though. San Francisco is attracting that by its liberal system, blah, blah, blah. I'd like to see some hard figures from people like Pete Wilson that this isn't a national problem. It is a national problem. Everybody knows that. Homelessness is a national problem. Poverty is a national problem. In fact, it seems to be a national priority these days with all the money being dumped into the Iraqi war and the military and the coffers of the rich and various tax giveaways and scams of all sorts. I may sound like a knee-jerk leftist to all of you, but that is, to some extent, my perspective on this, and particularly when people start ragging on poor people with cups, or guys who stand on the median of roads with signs, or people who sit on the sidewalk near stores. You know, I mean, or the crap that went down last summer with Riley and Porter blowing all this stuff out of proportion in order to give an election gift to the merchants of a whole bunch of unnecessary anti-homeless laws that didn't address issues, but that made us not only look ridiculous, but to give the essentially police a blank check to selectively enforce the way they inappropriately were doing before, and getting lots of complaints about, and then of course to shut down the police review board so those complaints would not be meaningfully examined. Now they're being examined in private by an out-of-town lawyer without any kind of public hearing prospect that's going down. All through a secret city council process. I'm kind of throwing a lot of this in. We're talking about what we just heard Pete Wilson, KGO commentator, talking about the new billboards downtown in San Francisco that urge people not to give to panhandlers. I'm going to read this Chronicle article about it. It's in the Mattier and Ross, it's kind of a regular two columnists, in the second section of the Wednesday, April 23rd Chronicle. San Francisco billboards slap handouts for feeding panhandlers vices. Hotel Council says giving to beggars fuels drug use and venereal disease. Having grown tired of their guests being hit up for spare change, the San Francisco Hotel Council is launching a $65,000 in-your-face anti-panhandling campaign featuring billboards that connect street begging with everything from drug abuse to the spread of sexually transmitted diseases. The campaign, which is reminiscent of those government ads that linked recreational drug use to world terrorism, features such images as a tourist couple saying, "Today we rode a cable car, visited Alcatraz, and supported a drug habit." A smiling man in a park saying, "Today I did Tai Chi, donated some change, and helped spread STDs." A hand holding a cup that has "Desperate for help" scrawled across it with "Help" crossed out and replaced by "Crack." All the ads include the message, "Giving to panhandlers doesn't help, it hurts." Pretty hard-hitting, aren't they? Hotel Executive Director Bob Begley said as he laid out a row of ads Tuesday. His group, which represents 55 hotels in town, including some of the biggest, plan to start posting the billboards by the end of the month. It is no secret that San Francisco's tourist industry is on the skids. A combination of having overbuilt hotels and competition from places such as Las Vegas, coupled with the after effects of September 11, 2001, the downturn in the economy, and now a scare over severe acute respiratory syndrome, SARS, has sent the hotel business into a tailspin. But the homeless have definitely had an impact as well, Begley said. For a while, we were able to tell people that the city was working on the problem, but now people say, "You told us that last time, and nothing's changed." Every time we go out of town to sell, we get the same response. "What's going on with the streets of San Francisco?" Begley said. Panhandling has become a cottage industry. And Begley says his group isn't just relying on billboards to stop it. "We're also going to be handing out cards to our guests, urging them to give to charities rather than panhandlers," he said. That's a nice pitch, but homeless rights advocate Paul Bowden, who says City Hall's support for the down-and-out has fallen steadily in recent years, isn't buying it. "It's slick, real slick," Bowden says from his Tenderloin office, "and the message is real clear. Hate the homeless, they spread drugs, disease, and close down businesses." But they don't say the disabled spread drugs or that the mentally ill spread disease. They don't use that as a point of attack, Bowden said. "Look, this isn't at all about solving the homeless problem. This is about making them go away," he said. "It's like they think if only the homeless left, then San Francisco would be Disneyland. It ain't going to happen." This isn't the first time the Hotel Council has come out swinging on the homeless issue. In July, just when Supervisor Gavin Newsom's Care Not Cash initiative was picking up steam, the council plastered the city with billboards carrying statements such as, "I don't want to sweep people off my doorstep," and "I want to know why homelessness is a problem after we spend $200 million last year." The billboards got a lot of attention, both here and nationally, and they helped fuel Newsom's initiative to replace most general assistance cash with money aimed at services. But they weren't real popular with Mayor Willie Brown, who said the last thing the city needed was an ad campaign slapping itself in the face. Brown has yet to see the new billboards, but when George Smith, who heads the mayor's homeless services, was told about the blitz, he had only one word to say: "Wow." Bowden said, "You know, it's interesting how these ads seem to come out just when there's an election heating up with their guy Newsom involved. It's pretty clear that what the agenda is." "If that's the case, it's a coincidence," Hotelier Begley said. "We're not political. That's not our intention. But the fact is, this remains a key issue." Meanwhile, down on Market Street, Jayhawk and his cup and sign that reads "Homeless, yes, but likes to get stoned" were at their usual spot in front of the Old Navy store Tuesday. "I'd have to agree with the ads," Jayhawk said after looking them over. "A lot of people do use the money for heroin or crack, but not me." Then pointing to his "likes to get stoned" placard, he adds, "That's just a gimmick." As for his take, he's got a lot in common with the hotel business. "It's hurting. Today I have made 75 cents, and I've been out here since 10 this morning. Say, you going to help me out with a little something?" And that's the column from Philip Mattier and Andrew Ross in the San Francisco Chronicle on Wednesday, April 23rd. And then the next day, actually it was Friday, in the business section, there's an article by David Lazarus in his column, "Lazarus at Large, Beggars Find San Francisco Profitable." San Francisco hotel operators are on the right track with a new ad campaign beginning today that urges people not to dole out spare change to the city's legion of panhandlers. But our sidewalks are overrun with beggars, not because these people are all, as the ad suggests, junkies and hookers, although it might seem that way to merchants who say filthy downtown streets are driving away business. Rather, street people of all stripes flock to San Francisco with outstretched hands for one reason and one reason only. It's profitable. I spent time with panhandlers up and down Market Street and was surprised to learn that most efforts earn $30 a day. Most earn $30 a day for their efforts. Multiply that by, say, 100 beggars citywide, a vastly conservative estimate, and it's clear that thousands of dollars are being provided in handouts every day. The problem isn't the panhandlers, it's us. Paul Cook, 40, passes his days sitting on an old plastic milk crate near the Old Navy store on 4th Street. His cat, Mutt, rests in a basket at his feet, the lure for passerbys to leave coins in a paper cup. Boy, could this be our catman, Paul? We'll have to find out. People are nice and generous here, Cook said contentedly. It's a great city. It's hard to see this changing as a result of ads that feature smiling tourists and the words, "Today we rode a cable car, visited Alcatraz, and supported a drug habit." Another ad, "Today I did Tai Chi, donated some change, and helped spread STDs." The campaign, costing $65,000, will focus primarily on ads atop taxis and on the sides of buses. "We're just saying that giving panhandlers a few cents does more harm than good," said Bob Begley, executive director of the San Francisco Hotel Council. "You're just increasing the problem." A considerably less aggressive move was announced recently by Mayor wannabe Gavin Newsom, who wants San Francisco visitors and residents to hand out vouchers instead of cash. Yet here again, you have to wonder if the idea has been thought all the way through. Eric Allgood, 29, who greeted passersby near Union Square with a cardboard sign reading, "Needy, not greedy," had his doubts. "I just got down from Portland a few weeks ago," he said. They've got vouchers up there, and I tell you, they don't work. Portland's program, dubbed Real Change, Not Spare Change, which is what they used to call it in Santa Cruz, features vouchers worth 25 cents apiece. The vouchers are redeemable for food, showers, and clothing at a handful of shelters. "It would be fine if each voucher was good for a meal," Allgood said, "but they're not. A meal costs 5 or 6 vouchers, so what's the point? I can make $30 or $40 in a day," he added. "I'm not going to out of my way for a voucher." Nevertheless, Newsom introduced a resolution at the Board of Supervisors meeting earlier this month in San Francisco, urging city officials to move ahead with the voucher program. He also wants an overhaul of panhandling laws. "I don't know of anyone who believes that what we're doing now on panhandling is working," he told me, "that the people of San Francisco are fed up with aggressive panhandling." Indeed, they are, but why should we think that vouchers will be any more effective here than they have been elsewhere? In Portland, John Sarbowski, a spokesman for the business group running the local program, said only about 500 four-voucher booklets were sold to local residents in the past year. A drop in the bucket. "A lot of panhandlers just aren't interested," he said. "It's very discouraging. Moreover, panhandlers I chatted with said they knew exactly what would happen if vouchers were offered in San Francisco. People will just sell them," said Cook, the one with the cat. "That's all they'd be good for." For instance, he said that while he doesn't do drugs, he still enjoys a nice stiff drink every now and then. Vouchers won't provide that. "You have to think about how you're going to get what you need," Cook said. "Necessities, you know? Most of the beggars I met seem like nice enough people. They have their problems, sure, but they generally refrain from getting in your face, and they don't expect anyone to do them favors. It's tempting to help out with some spare change. Hell, it's the decent thing to do. But it's not right, and that's not because you're encouraging drug abuse or the spread of venereal disease. It's not right because the streets are not an acceptable conduit for unstructured social services. San Francisco residents should be proud of their sense of humanity, but rewarding people for begging is neither humane nor respectful. It's demeaning to all and a blight on what was once the most beautiful city in the world. Newsom is correct. San Francisco needs to do something about its panhandlers and needs to do something soon. My suggestion, be polite and keep your money to yourself or donate it later to an appropriate charity. That's not the answer, but it's a start. David Lazarus. This column appears in the business section of the San Francisco Chronicle, and this is from Friday, April 25th. What do you think, callers? Or I should say non-callers. Give me a call here at 427-3772 if you'd like to talk about this issue. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3 FM. I'm Robert Norris, and this is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. Call in.
People said that I'm no good, so I headed on out to Hollywood. Hollywood. I've bet you didn't know, I bet you didn't care, I bet you would have stuck me anywhere, anywhere. 'Cause I got nothing to live for tonight, nothing to live for tonight except Hollywood, Hollywood. I saw Johnny rotten down on his knees, down on his love, begging me please don't go. Don't go to New York, don't go to L.A., don't go to Miami Beach to stay, to stay. 'Cause I'm a man with his hand in the master plan and a rainbow in my pocket and a key to unlock your door, your door. If you don't like my methods and you think I'm a hack, you'd probably be right. I won't be back, I won't be back. I got nothing to live for tonight, nothing to live for tonight except Hollywood. People said that I'm no good, so I headed on out to Hollywood, Hollywood. It was 1988, I had a monkey on my back. I was driving down the PCH with nowhere to go, nowhere to go. That's when I saw Johnny on the side of the road. He had a $2 nickel and was dancing like the Jack of Spades, the Jack of Spades. 'Cause I got nothing to live for tonight, nothing to live for tonight except Hollywood.
Left, folks, the home of the beautiful Greta Garbo. So we gotta go on Holland Drive, and a man with a smile said we had just a few more miles to go, miles to go. So I booted in gear and I hit the gas, and I spun those tires like my mind through my trip in past, my trip in past. When I saw Johnny looking for a place to hide, a place to hide. Johnny looked at me and he said real fast, this screwed up L.A. scene just can't last, it just can't last. 'Cause I got nothing to live for tonight, nothing to live for tonight except Hollywood.
Yeah, I love, really love what you're trying to do here.
Smith on Hollywood album. You're tuned to Free Radio 96.3. And on the line, I think we have Thomas Levitt. Are you there, Thomas? I think he's still looking for some documents. Just a quick comment on the Billboard panhandling thing in the last.
Hello?
Hey, Thomas.
Hey.
Hi, just hang with me for just a second. I'm
sure.
Concluding some the issue of the billboards against panhandlers up in San Francisco. Yeah, David Lazarus's article was kind of interesting in the Friday Chronicle. His final comment was, well, you know, it's not that panhandling is a facilitates drug use generally or facilitates, you know, it's STDs or things of that sort, which is what these billboards are claiming, but that it's rather, he says, the streets are not an appropriate venue for charity, and that it's sort of undignified and demeaning and humiliating. And my response is, of course, that that's all true. But since the social services are wholly inadequate, you have to give people the opportunity to do what they need to do, and you can't criminalize it and discouraging people from helping them while not letting them understand that the social services are totally inadequate is a form of denial. So, just wanted to say that, and Thomas, you can comment on that if you want. I know we're talking to Thomas Levitt, who's an unsuccessful but struggling city council candidate during the last election, Green Party activist. I guess you're on the Living Wage Commission. Any other credits we should note?
Well, I'm involved in just about everything.
You're the greatest, Tom. I gotta say that. Also, of course, you're notorious for your pro-French affiliations.
Yes.
You have not yet changed, you know, your French hairdo to your freedom hairdo. Anyway, so here you are, and I guess you got some information about the Earth Day stuff that's happening today during the afternoon in the park?
Well, there's some kind of Earth Day event going on today in San Lorenzo Park, and I'm going to be tabling there from 11 to 1 o'clock, along with Todd Landis, another Green Party guy, and a potential candidate for elected office. Earth Day, I think, quite honestly, is much more corporate than it used to be. Mm. You know, when you've got, like, major multinational corporations sponsoring Earth Day and promoting it, you pretty much have got to assume that it's been co-opted.
Well, what are you doing there at the Green Party table in the middle of a corporate co-option there, Thomas?
I'm trying to educate people about what's really going on.
I see. You're hoping that your small table will outweigh the larger many tables up and down the... Where is this again? Is this at San Lorenzo or is this...
This is San Lorenzo Park.
San Lorenzo, okay.
Yes. Well, you know, there's a lot of people who go out to Earth Day because, you know, they're not really fully aware of how corporatized it's become, et cetera. And so, you know, they're interested. And they're open to hearing about what's going on with the environment. And so, you know, you can either let all the corporate types have them and, you know, program them, or you can counter-program the corporate types.
Right, you got to watch out. They don't use you as an example of how diverse they are over their Earth Day. Well, I know that Jeffrey Gale, my co-host on Thursday, was saying that Emily Riley and maybe Sam Farr are going to be showing up doing a little political huckstering.
I have no idea. I didn't even realize Earth Day was tomorrow because, you know...
I mean today, right?
It's just another day. Although in 1990, it was much more cool.
Now, you're talking about today, right, Sunday?
Yes.
Right, okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Many things were much more cool in 1990. It's true in some respects.
I think we had David Brower speaking.
Mm-hmm. So you got Emily Riley and Sam Farr speaking. I guess that's...
Not... quite comparable figures in the history of this country.
I would say it's kind of completely in the opposite direction. I mean, although I don't know. The issue for me, for Farr, is the war, and for Riley is her complete devastation, continuing devastation of civil rights for homeless people.
Right. Well, you know, you have to look at it, you know, in the broadest possible perspective. You could be in, like, Nebraska, where they simply beat people senseless, or in Alabama.
Yeah, I know.
So
that's the Rodkin position. I've heard it before, and frankly, it doesn't impress me much.
Mm-hmm.
The Rodkin position is, oh, we're so much better than Carmel because we have a sleeping ban which requires the police to,
right,
you know, give people tickets or, you know, rouse them on threat of tickets rather than simply beat them up and drop them at the edge of town.
Right, well, you know, so, I mean, Rodkin's position is they shouldn't be judged or criticized from that, I guess. My position is, well, you know, we simply have higher standards here.
I see. Well, I think getting higher would be a good idea, particularly, I'm struck by the proposal in yesterday's Sentinel by Marty Wormhout, I guess it was. Maybe it was proposed on Friday, or maybe Valerie Corral proposed it. Did you read the Sentinel?
I only read the editorial pages, and then I scan the news, so I don't think I looked at it that closely yesterday.
Yeah, I've got the paper here somewhere as I roam through my, Saturday Mercury News, Santa Cruz, here we go, medical marijuana ID card sought. This is a front, above the fold headline by Janine Harlick.
Mm-hmm.
Wormhout is asking her colleagues to give conceptual okay to a program which County residents who use marijuana as medicine would get ID cards that would let sheriff's deputies know they are an approved user. This would mirror one pioneered by San Francisco County 3 years ago. Alameda, Marin, and Mendocino counties also offer the cards. Under the program, ill residents issued photo IDs after presenting a signed statement from a doctor saying they need marijuana for medical reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Although I don't think doctors like to say that. They like to say they benefit from marijuana or something. The cards would legitimize medicinal marijuana use to sheriff's deputies challenging someone's possession. Tracy, Sheriff Mark Tracy, supports the program. They would prohibit officers from confiscating marijuana from someone when they think a resident possesses more than is needed to ease his or her symptoms. This sounds like a positive thing. That's not a determination a deputy should be making, said Valerie Corral, director of Women and Men's Alliance for Medical Marijuana. And I applaud her for that statement. She said she's received hundreds of requests for ID cards from ill residents. When WAM issued its own cards, the organization gave them only to members, which is limited to a pool of about 250. And the program would be a boon not only to patients, but also to doctors, because physicians sometimes fear putting their medical recommendations of marijuana in writing because of possible reprisals by the feds. I know my doctor does. Steve Halpern refuses to do that in most, if not all, cases, which maintains that all pot use is illegal. Under the proposed program, doctor statements would be destroyed after verification to protect a physician's identity. And then an interesting bit of information. The program would also get the county a step closer to complying with a long-overdue mandate approved by county voters in 1992, Corral said. Measure A, at that time, required the county health department to help promote medicinal pot use through education, research, and other programs.
No.
Interesting, isn't it, that was 11 years ago, and the county has done absolutely nothing in that regard that I'm aware of?
I have no idea what the county would be doing in that matter. Now, is the county going to maintain a recorded registry of these people, or are they simply going to issue an ID card and then destroy all evidence of the fact that they've issued the card?
Well, the story is limited. There's a couple more paragraphs. The program would not cost the county because of fees charged each user. San Francisco charges $25,
mm-hmm.
and that county has issued more than 4,400 cards. Joshua Bamberger up there, program director, says the program has worked very well. Wormhead is asking the board to okay looking into an ID program with the health director reporting back on the issue of May 20th.
Well, the only issue that I've heard with the medical marijuana ID and registries, et cetera, is that it gives the Fed, if the county maintains a record, it gives the Fed, exact list of all the people to go round up, arrest, and target.
Right.
So
that's certainly a drawback.
If there's actually a centralized registry that these cards can be, checked against.
You've been working with SCAN and the Green Party, too, and they've had meetings recently. Have they done anything on the medical marijuana front? And by this I refer, or on the drug war front locally, which is even more important, perhaps, than medical marijuana because it covers a much broader number of people. And there's, of course, massive drug war continuing against, I would say, everybody in the county who engages in recreational drug use and happens to be, unfortunately.
Well, there is one. It would be interesting because if the Reverend had a medical marijuana ID card.
Talking about the Reverend Jason Pascal?
The question, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Would Officer Baker have been bound to honor it? Are we going to be requesting that Santa Cruz?
I think he actually did have a medical marijuana card of some kind. I mean, he had a letter or some such thing.
Right.
Which later showed up. This is, of course, the case, for those who don't know, of a man who's now been deported to New Hampshire. That's the bad news. It happened, I guess, on Thursday or Friday last week.
Mm.
He languished in jail for a couple of weeks. He was on the street. You may remember him. He was the guy who did tarot and spiritual card readings on Pacific Avenue, initially from on top of a utility box until Baker drove him away.
Mm.
Sergeant Baker. And then he did it from on top of milk crates covered by a blanket until he was arrested for unauthorized use of a milk crate by Sergeant Baker.
Mm-hmm.
And then he came back and used a box until he was arrested by Sergeant Baker for this outstanding warrant, which Baker had tried to arrest him for 8 months before, but New Hampshire refused to serve, but Baker persuaded them to serve. So would he have been exempt from the first arrest? Well, Baker also arrested him for, quote, possession of hypodermic needles, holding the needles high up in the air, Baker did, and saying, do we want this on Pacific Avenue? And, of course, they were his insulin needles for his diabetic condition. So Baker, as usual, is several beats off on this one. And I actually gave him a chance to reply to my latest story, which I encourage people to listen to look at on the Indie Media website at www.santacruz.indiemedia.org. But I'm interested, Thomas, what's happening with SCAN and the Green Party? Are they considering these local issues at all? I know you were successful in getting them to look at some of these issues.
Well,
the ordinances.
SCAN is highly focused on trying to encourage citizen participation in the budget, city and county budget process. They've made the determination that their limited resources allow them to require that they focus on one issue at this point.
Now, there was a SCAN mass meeting, a week or two ago?
On the 17th of April.
And how many people showed up at that meeting?
There were 41 votes in favor of endorsing the Measure B, which is the school parcel tax.
How many against?
Actually, 34 votes in favor, 3 against, and 4 abstentions.
Well, I know that I saw Bernice...
So those 41 total votes.
I saw old-time Scanster and Scan Steering Committee member Bernice Belton at the Iraqi town hall meeting giving out notices of the Scan meeting, but only to Scan members. It was very strange. She didn't want it... the Scan meeting is supposed to be open to the public, right?
I would assume that it's open to the public. Anybody can join, but you can't vote if you haven't been a member for less than 30 days.
She apparently didn't want people who were not members to be showing up at that meeting, or maybe she had, she may have had a limited number of flyers, but
That's what I would assume.
I think somebody asked her about it, and she didn't claim she had a limited number of flyers. She just dismissed the question because people were not sure what she was doing. I'm always rather suspicious of Bernice and SCAN because I know that they have a kind of a closed system there. The same people keep getting elected steering committee members. We get the same, we get votes. You can get the general membership to vote for civil rights for homeless people or for protections for the Dolphin Lee tenants who are now being driven away or were driven away or bought off. But then when it gets down to the committee meetings and the steering committee, she acts differently and they change things around. So what happened at the SCAN committee meeting?
The
SCAN general meeting.
We voted to endorse the impeachment of George Bush, and
but not of council member Tim Fitzmaurice, of course.
No. That did not come up as a proposition, although, you know, SCAN's membership does include a very affordable $5 low-income membership that gives you full voting privileges. So if a substantial number of people chose to join SCAN today and show up at the general meeting that will happen in the fall...
Actually, they could provoke a general meeting immediately by demanding one if enough people requested...
I guess once 30 days had passed, yes, that is quite true.
Right.
I don't remember exactly how many that would be.
Mm-hmm.
So there are rules. They are published. So...
I understand that. The point is that given the organization such as it is, it's important for people who are looking at it to realistically see what it is and what it does and what it doesn't do. And that, I think, is primarily an election vehicle for certain council members. And I guess, I don't know, some people have some hopes. I mean, SCAN made some good statements last summer against the downtown ordinances, but then did absolutely nothing about them in the fall that I'm aware of. And I guess you, Thomas, were really trying in your election campaign to bring the issue straight to the streets of the selective enforcement harassment practices of the police department.
Well, I did get more votes than any other candidate for office, despite my unreasonably radical positions on that, than anyone except Tim Fitzmaurice when SCAN made its endorsement decisions.
But SCAN still refused to... nobody offered an impeachment resolution against Tim Fitzmaurice, let's say, or...
That was not offered or put on the agenda.
Even though Fitzmaurice voted for the anti-musician laws in January, even though Fitzmaurice voted for the expansion of the forbidden zones last year against homeless people and panhandlers?
Yes.
Yeah, even though Fitzmaurice has done nothing while the CPRB... He voted for the destruction of the CPRB as well.
Yes, he's made quite a few unprogressive votes in the... overall scheme of things.
Give us some hope. Tell us some progressive votes that Tim Fitzmaurice has made.
You know, I don't follow the city council that closely.
Indeed.
I'm sure he's done quite a few positive things.
We have to. We remain hopeful at all times, right? Now, what about the Green Party? The Green Party has actually been doing more around issues of protecting people on the streets.
Green Party's endorsed a whole passel of state legislation. You can find out about all the details of what happened at the last meeting on the Santa Cruz GreenParty.org website. They will be tabling today from 11 o'clock onwards at Earth Day. I have a pretty active tabling program going on. And there will probably be several Green Party candidates for local office next fall.
I noticed that we found absolutely nothing on the city council agenda regarding the war, in spite of its 3 or 4 time delay by Mayor Riley.
Well, you know, I think Mike Rotkin pretty much made it clear that the city council had determined that they had expended the appropriate amount of time and energy and attention on this, and that it was probably not productive.
Now, I'm not going
to
let Tim Fitzmaurice off the hook. Mike Rotkin is, you know, he's not, I guess Rotkin's still a member of SCAN, but he hasn't been endorsed for SCAN for years, nor by the Green Party. But the organization, two organizations you belong to, has endorsed Fitzmaurice.
Uh-huh.
Actually, I don't know if the Green
Party... The Green Party did not endorse Fitzmaurice
in
the last election. He fell short by about one vote.
Right, he fell short by one vote, and the Green Party has declined to censure him in spite of his obvious violations of the Green Party platform around the homeless, repeated obvious violations. Is that accurate?
Yes, Tim Fitzmaurice has made many votes that I don't think would be in conformance with the Green Party's plank on homelessness issues as written by David Silva way back when.
Yeah.
That still forms the bulk of the platform on that issue.
And the fact of the matter is that Riley canceled the council meeting, the town hall meeting in March.
Mm-hmm.
She agreed to delay the vote on the 7th and again on the 8th, and then last Tuesday, the entire matter disappeared from the agenda. Now, her explanation for this was when she talked to me later on the phone, explaining her phone had been off for 3 days, which I believe, her light burned out or something, was that it was Kennedy and Porter who withdrew their resolutions. But that doesn't let Fitzmaurice and Riley and the others off the hook.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. is occupying Iraq. Was there any discussion of the war whatsoever at any of these meetings that you were at?
Well, there was an extensive discussion of the war and George Bush and all that at the SCAN meeting. It was actually, like, unscripted and not really on the agenda that resulted in a pretty extensive resolution being offered.
To impeach Bush, but not to, for example, censure Farr or to demand that Riley keep her commitments or to insist that Fitzmaurice keep his commitments, right?
I don't know what the details of the resolution were at this point, but I do not believe that any of them directly referenced Congressman Farr or the city council.
So like the Emancipation Proclamation, it freed the slaves where the federal government had no power and kept people in slavery where it did. In other words, this affects people at a national... It criticizes national leaders,
mm-hmm.
calls for their impeachment, but has nothing to say about local leaders where there might actually be some impact or some power.
I suppose.
Well, there's no need to suppose. You were at the meetings, right?
Yes. But nobody introduced such a resolution. I didn't introduce such a resolution. I was focused on other issues.
Right. Now, what other issues did they do good things on that we can at least point to and say, maybe someday?
Well, you know, they did. They endorsed the school parcel tax. And I believe that was just about the only thing that was on the agenda as far as that goes. They've been restructuring so that they can actually function as an organization, which would theoretically induce more accountability, et cetera. But actually, I have some other events that I think people might be interested in attending that are happening today.
Tell me.
So, I don't know much about this, but there is this Common Unity, creating and choosing and creating a positive future for Santa Cruz. That's going to happen today from 4 to 6 p.m. at the 418 Project on 418 Front Street in downtown Santa Cruz. And it's launching an effort to invite a broad cross-section of our community to build a positive vision for our future that would form the basis of communication and coordination among all the groups and individuals united by that vision. And they are going to be do various things, including revisiting the core community values of all human needs met, resources shared, simple living, healthy diversity, nonviolent justice and communication, ability to contribute, mutual help, local production, integrated society, participatory democracy, and public benefit. And the people associated with this are Tom Shaver, Nancy Glock-Renix, Mary Salas, Chris Ganson, Brent Levin, Doug Cronin, Stessa Thompson, Chip, and Carl Wilson. And some of those names I recognize, and they're...
Is there a phone number people can call if they can't make it to this meeting?
It's 427... It's 247-1640. That's Tom Shaver. And it's Firestoker, F-I-R-E-S-T-O-K-E-R, at earthlink.net.
One more time, Firestoker is spelled...
F-I-R-E-S-T-O-K-E-R at earthlink.net.
Okay, this is 4 to 6 at what address?
418 Project, which is 14 Front Street in downtown Santa Cruz.
Right. Well, I know that Tom has been involved in a number of projects. He's a very passionate idealist who gets involved sometimes with the wrong people, in my view. He did a lot of work on the Camp Paradise issue with the Santa Cruz Service Corps, and ended up supporting the Paul Lee clique who took it over and ran away with it over the majority of the people who were trying to act mm-hmm. as a group democratically. But he also, you know, he's been a fighter for, you know, for civil rights in different areas. And I'm still not clear what this group is doing. Do you have any, have you talked to any of these people about
it? I have not talked to any of these people, but I guess it's somehow trying to create a vision of structure it says an enabling structure to support coordinated action among groups and individuals in Santa Cruz who are dedicated to sustainability, peace, and social justice within our community and throughout the planet.
Uh-oh, watch out. It's pretty vague.
Theoretically, you know, this would be it would be nice to actually get all the people who are actually dedicated to these things and doing all their own little individual, you know, single issues to work together on a broader front.
Sure, that's for sure.
I respect Carl Wilson and Nancy Glock-Runich. You know, I've done a lot of stuff with them in the Green Party.
Is Carl Wilson a part of this?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, I don't think that they're the type of people that are just going to waste their time.
Well, look, if you go there, I'd love to get a report as to how it goes. And again, I've heard also that, I guess you haven't heard the details, but I've heard that Farr and Riley are going to be at some Earth Day speak out deal day, assuming it doesn't rain. Does it look like rain to you?
I don't know. I haven't checked outside in the last hour or so. So the other things that are happening is there's a Charlie King and Karen Brandow thing at the Resource Center for Nonviolence. It's a folk concert. It's co-sponsored by the RCNV and SEIU 415.
Is it free, or do you have to pay money to get
it? It requires money.
How much?
It's $10 in advance or $12 adult, $8 children at the door.
So it's not for poor people, in other words.
It depends on how poor you are.
Right. It's a benefit for those groups. Okay.
So I assume it's supposed to reimburse these people for actually showing up and traveling to Santa Cruz. It could be $25 or $40 at the Catalyst. So that's happening at the Friends Meeting House at 225 Rooney Street in Santa Cruz. And you can find out more information about it on the Resource Center for Nonviolence website. And then from 4 to 6 at the same time as the first thing I talked about, the Queer Youth Leadership Awards are happening. And that's happening at Watsonville High School Mellow Center in Watsonville. And that's happening from 4 to 8 o'clock. And that's $20 adult tickets, $15 student senior, $10 youth 18 years and younger. But no one will be turned away for lack of funds.
I just got an email here coming in that says that a SCAN member says that if you are an elected official, you can't be a member of SCAN. That's the Santa Cruz Action Network.
You cannot sit on their steering committee.
Oh, I see.
But you can be a member.
I see.
At least that's my understanding.
I see. So maybe that's a confusion there. Just wanted to...
Yes, I had to resign from the steering committee when I ran for city council.
So you're not just an elected person, but a person who's running for office, huh?
Right, once you formally declared and filed your papers and everything.
By the way, for those who want to email me, because you can't get on because we're so long-winded on the phone, it's rnorse@hotmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
rnorse@hotmail.com.
Yes.
We're talking to Thomas Levitt. So, Thomas, anything else? I know there's a city council meeting coming up on the 29th.